Hello world, welcome to the Rod and Rain show. This is Al Rod.
And Lady Rain here. This week's episodes are going to be a little different because we're actually looking at all of Rusty Cundiff and Darren Scott's horror anthology movies, because of course Tales from the Hood 3 is a part of a trilogy of anthologies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then they also released American Nightmares the same year they released Tales from the Hood 2. And they're all a combination of horror tales. So I thought it would be kind of cool to just first take each movie individually and talk about the stories within that movie and rank them about, you know, how we felt they were in quality and horror and theme and you know, just ranking them per movie. And then after we've, you know, gotten through all the movies, we'll then rank all four of the horror anthology movies and see, you know, which one did it best. So we're going to start with Tales from the Hood 3 tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I believe tonight's episode, I get to start us off.
Yep.
As usual, we don't share our rankings with each other before we do these conversations, so I am very interested to see what Rod has to say about where these movies went on his list. I feel like I might surprise him with where I put some of these stories.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where you land, because we've had previous discussions about, all of these movies before, and I thought I had kind of an idea of where you were with everything, so I'm kind of interested to see what kind of swerves you might throw at.
Yeah, I don't think you'll be shocked at like how I begin with my bottom, but I think you might be a little shocked as I get closer to the top. Now, this is only five stories. We did note the actual titles of the stories and who was responsible for like the main writing of the story, so that I did take into some consideration in my ranking. Well, I didn't take who wrote it in consideration, but I did find it interesting whose movies ended up in the top and whose ended up in the bottom on my list, because there is kind of a trend there.
Okay.
So to begin, so again, five stories. There are four stories in this movie, and then the wraparound story is what we're considering the fifth story.
Mm-hmm.
So my number five is Ruby Gates.
Ruby Gates is your number five. Okay.
Ruby Gates is my number five. We kind of nicknamed these stories before we knew the actual names of each story, so we kind of know it as like the apartments. Yeah. Like as our reminder of like what story was that. And it's at the bottom to me, like just straight from my notes, I wrote just boring. Ruby Gates just, it was slow to me. It dragged on for too long. The horror wasn't really horrifying to me. I didn't like the dialogue. I just felt like this was one of two stories that were the closest to being a tale from the hood to me. And I feel like if you're going to focus on, like, you know, kind of this rundown apartment building that's being taken over to be gentrified,
mm-hmm.
I just thought the horror could have just hit a lot harder with that theme of gentrification. I feel like gentrification could have been like the villain of that horror story, and it could have just been so much stronger, but instead it was just full of bad effects, unnatural dialogue, and just dry and slow.
Yeah, the fire effects throughout that story, I noticed, were pretty damn terrible. And the basketball, when it's bouncing.
That basketball was terrible.
Yeah.
The fire was terrible.
Yeah, I'll get into more what my gripes were once I hit it on my list, but I can't disagree with a single thing you said.
It's at the bottom for me because it starts out, it's the first story after the wraparound intro,
mm-hmm.
and for that to be the story that starts us off and you're already so bored, it makes it hard for you to want to like stick around and keep watching. Because I know, like, this time, I mean, we watched it in the middle of the day, so it was able to, you know, we were able to get through it. But, like, I remember there's a time we put it on to watch, to talk about it before, and we put it on, like, you know, at evening time, bedtime, and you fall asleep on the first story. You fall asleep on Ruby Gates because it's just that dry. And I'm like, it's just, it's all supposed to be a horror movie. Like, yeah. You should be afraid to fall asleep damn near, you know? And it's like, it's so dry and slow and just uninteresting that we dozed off and was like, we'll just finish this tomorrow. Like,
yeah, I remember.
You know, and we wouldn't do that on some of the other stories, I don't think. I mean, I feel like you could probably say that about a lot of these stories, but that story to start it off, I think it's the driest out of all the stories in Tales 3. The slowest and the most boring.
Okay.
So that's why I put it in my fifth spot, because it was just, it did nothing for me.
Okay.
Like, and how you can have like a kid with cancer in a story and it still does nothing for me, like, says a lot.
Yeah.
The makeup on the kid was terrible. I know that has nothing to do with story, but I just don't know where their budget went on this movie. Whatever budget they did have, because the kid looked green. Like, the effects were terrible. The dialogue was so bad to me in that one.
Yeah, I'm a...
The dialogue was so... I'm like, it just didn't even... Like, conversations don't work that way.
Yeah, man.
And I'm going to throw it out there. Ruby Gates is a Darren story. So I'm just going to throw that out there as a note. So just keep that in mind. But Ruby Gates was noted as written by Darren Scott. So there's that. But yeah, so it's my number five.
Yeah, I feel you on that. And it very well could be interchangeable with my number five. But for me, I chose Mouths of Babes and Demons as my number five. The wraparound story. There are elements of it that are creepy. Tony Todd just brings a presence that automatically just puts you in a mode of discomfort. And, you know, you don't feel secure about what's going on throughout the wraparound as it develops. But I think as a framing device for the rest of the movie, it is by far the weakest wraparound story we've had out of all the Tales from the Hood movies. It just feels so disjointed from the rest of it. And like, I feel like a wraparound really should function to at least attempt to frame the rest of what we're seeing in an effective way. Now, I know in Tales from the Hood 2, some of how the tales delivered to the robo-patriot, it just feels so incongruent with the purpose of telling those tales. But, they attempted to kind of make that connection, whereas with Tales from the Hood 3, it's just so, all the tales are so arbitrarily just thrown out, and it's like, I don't get it. It's like, why? I just want to tell you stories. And that's why it's at number five for me. I'm not saying it's it doesn't have elements that are creepy or anything. I just think as a framing device, it was not effective, and it didn't do what I feel like a wraparound is supposed to do in a Tales from the Hood movie. So, yeah.
I'm going to keep my comments to myself on that one, because it's not my number five.
Okay.
But I could see why it's your number five. That makes sense. I mean, I will say it is probably the weakest of the wraparounds. So, yeah. I don't think you're wrong there. But I'm going to keep the rest of my comments to myself on that one for now. My number four. Operatic.
Okay.
Operatic is a story of a chick who can barely sing, but they want us to think she can sing.
Yeah.
She gets scouted by this guy who claims he's an up-and-coming manager, and she needs money until she, you know, makes it big. So he's like, hey, I know this old rich opera singer who can't take care of herself. She'll pay you to just sit and watch opera with her all day or something. Mm-hmm. And it turns out they're like, I don't think they're vampires, but apparently they're body snatchers. Well, we'll put it that way. And she's been very patient waiting for the perfect instrument within a young lady whose body she could then possess and revive her opera career because it was cut short in her youth. It's just dumb. It was not a tale from the hood. Nowhere near the hood.
I agree.
Wasn't as boring as Ruby Gates, but it did nothing for me. I don't know what the message was supposed to be for that one. Just, you know, that's chasing the fountain of youth. I don't know what we were supposed to get out of that. Like, I feel like Tales from the Hood, at least from what we know from the first Tales from the Hood movie, like, these tales are supposed to give you some sort of social message, but framed in the genre of horror. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to get some social commentary out of Tales from the Hood tales. That's my understanding of Tales from the Hood. I don't know the social commentary we were supposed to get out of Operatic.
I'll throw out what I think is possibly being worked in there when I get to it on my list.
Okay. Because to me right now, I'm just like,
yeah, we
what people will do to get money. Because, I mean, I did leave out a part like they did, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it's more, I think it's more related to that.
To that part. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Possibly. I was thinking that, but I'm like, that's still...
No, I hear you. It's kind of thin.
It's still weak to me.
Yeah.
Like, you're grasping.
It's a little thin. Yeah. For, especially when you consider themes that...
That are they've in the first worked tales. With
before.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of thin.
Yeah. It's kind of like, this stakes. Is a story you told to be the vehicle for our social commentary on the things people will do for money. Like,
yeah.
You could have told a different story and given us that message a lot stronger. So yeah, it's number four on my list because it fell flat. The message was thin. It wasn't a hood tale. Just no. I will give it, you know, I like to try to give kudos where I can. I did like that they had Lynn Whitfield in that story. I always am happy to see her get work. She's a legend to me. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to see that, you know, they were able to get a name like her in there on top of, you know, Tony Todd and the wraparound. But so I don't have a problem with her performance or anything, but the story, it's just unfortunate that that's the story they put her in.
So my number four is actually, I surprised myself putting this here because this was one I used to like a lot more in our previous viewings. But watching it today, I realized maybe The Bunker is thematically solid. Like, I love what it's saying, but it gets to a point where you're just watching this character do these rants, and I just feel like it goes on longer than necessary because the point is well made within like 6-7 minutes into this, and I just feel like it continues to drag as if we don't have enough evidence that this man is just this racist with all this backwards ass thinking. We see it for what it is, and then I just think it stretches out for too long. And I love the conclusion of it where we see that there are all these people just kind of just observing him. It made me like wish that we were closer to a world that was like this, where we just kind of look at these people as relics of the past. Because one thing I really love about it is it just exposes how animalistic and low-level thinking the racist mindset is, and how at its very nature, at its core, it is just some very unevolved type shit. Like, these people are, they're almost subhuman in the way they look at the world, because of, it's just crazy. Like, at its core, racism is completely illogical. It is insane, and it is barbaric. And you see this guy, and he's, I mean, he's like the barest form of racist that cannot be socialized. And at its core, that's what it is. I mean, you are not an evolved person. You're just very far behind. And there is a point to watching him do his thing for that long and exposing that for all it is. I just think it got to a point where some of it started to get a little redundant. But the more I kind of talk it out, it's like, maybe I have it a little too low.
That's why I've been sitting here so quietly, because I have it at number 3.
Yeah, maybe, on my list. Maybe I have it a little too low.
For a lot of the reasons you just stated. It's not higher on my list, but I did put it at the middle.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was a very clever way to portray like what racism should really be. Like, it should be something that is an exhibit, because it's just so outlandish, or so like, it's like this anomaly or something. Was like, or you know, like they had it identified as like an endangered species. And it's like, yes, that's how it should be treated, that there are very few of these left and they're almost extinct, and we have them here for
like
you to look at. But I do agree that the rants went on too long. That's why I didn't make it up higher, because I did feel like it dragged on for a bit too long and it just started getting weird.
Yeah, it got weird.
Got weird, and I'm like, okay, I felt like we were kind of straying from like the heart of like a racist after a while. I was like, okay, where are we going here? Like, it started merging into like a few other little things.
Yeah.
I was like, let's keep it just the American racist. Can we keep it there?
Are you referring more so to when he started to do that shit with the blow-up dolls?
Yeah, the dolls like and the poster. And I'm like, okay, now we're like, all right, we're getting into some like chauvinistic stuff in there and all of that. And there was clearly, I wouldn't have thought much of it, but at the like end of that story, the kids were like, can we go to the male chauvinist exhibit next? And the teacher was like, oh, we got about 20 minutes left, so if we move quick. So it's like there's an exhibit for that.
Yeah.
So it's like some of what he was doing could have been in the exhibit they were about to go to.
Yeah.
For me. So that was what really just triggered the thought where I'm like, okay, we could have probably cut some of what he was doing, and it could have been another exhibit of another group of people that should be looked at as an endangered species. But
I think there's some overlap.
The blow-up doll part was fine, because it was a black blow-up doll.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a problem with that. But, like, the poster and the way he was all with the old girl in the red, white, and blue poster and stuff, like, that could have probably been in the male chauvinist exhibit. But, the black blow-up doll part
fit. It's like some...
Because we're their dolls. They want to dominate black women like that. They will fetishize us all day.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
For their satisfaction, but
like, they have the hatred there, but they have like a repressed sexual like fascination.
Yes, so that part made sense to me, the way he was with the doll.
Yeah.
But I did put it at 3 because I felt like some of it just went on. It got a little weird. And then I did have, this is probably like just nitpicky. But then I did write down the question of just like, how are they observing this exhibit when they're like outside the bubble and he's inside a bunker? So I'm like, is he up on a screen or something for them to see what he's doing, or are they just hearing him? Like, it's not clear how that exhibit works for them to all be standing outside this force field looking at his bunker. But the whole story pretty much took place inside his bunker. So I'm like, how are they seeing what he's doing? Like, I could understand him talking. They probably hear him on the loudspeaker. Yeah. But I'm just like, is there some screen or something they're watching to see everything he's doing in there? Gotcha. So that was just a question I had of like, are they just standing out there listening to him?
Yeah.
And staring at his bunker? Or can they see him being racist inside his bunker?
Yeah.
Or is that just for us as viewers? So that was the only like kind of question I had. So I left it at the middle. But I did like that story. Still not a hood story per se. Still not a Tales from the Hood for me. But it is a theme and barrier or experience that those in the hood or everywhere people of color face. So it is it is a theme that's relevant to the hood.
Yeah.
So I was able to put it at number three.
Okay. My number three, surprised myself, but I put Ruby Gates at number three, which is higher than
I am shocked.
I would have thought that I would put there. And it's mainly because I feel like the first fourth to maybe half of it is actually okay. I was kind of just willing to, I don't know what it was today. I was just willing to kind of go along with this character and his ambition to just kind of move up and cover his own ass, even though, I mean, he's despicable as hell. But with Tales from the Hood, you kind of get invested in despicable people getting their comeuppance by the close of the story.
Right.
I think what really just doesn't work and just persists to not work for me every time I rewatch this is the family in the apartment, they're not acted well.
Oh my gosh.
Like you mentioned, the dialogue was just really clunky and unnatural, and it was really written so that those characters, they're designed only for you to sympathize with them and not to really connect with them as human beings. Right. They're like, every single moment is just,
you're supposed to just feel
it's
sad.
Supposed to be so sweet and endearing, and it's just like, it was just too much. I'm like, you're laying it on just a little too damn thick. And
it was very inauthentic.
It really was. It's like, you are trying way too hard to make me sympathize with these people, and I feel like I should just be naturally connecting with them. So when the fire finally happens and, you know, tragedy strikes, I was left cold because it's a terrible thing to say because this poor boy has cancer and
right.
everything.
What I mean. It's like you're supposed to feel bad for this, but to me, like, the story just, it took so damn long that I was like, like, hurry up and just kill him. Like, good lordy. Like, I was just waiting for the investor or whatever. And I'm like, when are we getting to the die part? Like,
that part was taking so long. When he finally gets back to the apartments, it really just starts to drag because you're just waiting for the inevitable. It's like he has these visions of this family haunting him. He picks up the phone. He keeps hearing
the basketball.
And we're just like, just take the story where it's going to go.
Right. Like, and then they're throwing in all these like antics in the, when he's back at the apartments, and it's like, we got the basketball and he goes in the apartment and there's the clown in the closet. I'm like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Like,
and you know what I was thinking?
I felt like the family should have been more haunting than like the apartments themselves as the haunt.
And what I was thinking in that is, you have this long stretch of just waiting for whatever's going to end him to end him, basically.
Right.
And I was just thinking about how in the first Tales from the Hood, I mean, we kind of have a similar setup with Duke Metgar, where we're just kind of waiting for the dolls to kind of do their thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's visual entry.
There is.
And seeing the doll.
And
there's interesting buildup. And even though you you know he's gonna get it. You're interested to see how. Right. And you know, you have the unique addition of just the dolls and seeing how they're gonna how they pull off the effect and everything.
Right. Whereas like you got this man haunted by a basketball.
You have the poorly done CGI basketball and, you know, horrible fire effects, and it's just like it just doesn't even live up to what they did 20 years ago.
And then he becomes a murderer to avoid becoming an accomplice to murder. I'm like, yeah. What? Yeah. I am really shocked because this also means that one of my bottom movies is one of your top movies, and I'm just like, how?
Yeah.
That's crazy. So I'm just going, I don't know if you finished with that one. I'm just sitting here like, wow, I didn't. This list is probably going to be our biggest separation of rankings that we've had so far.
Yeah, I think the only reason I entertained putting it above The Bunker is because The Bunker to me is just, it feels a little more low effort because most of that story is just this guy ranting inside a bunker. And I mean, that is literally all there is to it.
But then you get to the end of that story and you see the reveal of like, it's not just a man ranting in his bunker. It's like a dude who's in a
zoo. He's
on display in a zoo. And it's like, because they called it a zoo. It's not like a museum or something. It's like, it was called like the Central Zoo or something. And they were asking like, and because he comes out the bunker mad that these people are watching him and tries to shoot them. Because of course, you know, this is also a racist who loves his guns.
Yeah.
And because he's in a force field, it ricochets and kills him. And the kids are like, oh, man, they already said he was an endangered species. They're like, is he extinct? And the teacher's like, oh, there might be another one at the Mississippi Zoo or whatever. So it's like they're putting these racists in zoos.
Yeah.
And we know zoos to be for putting animals on display. And I just loved that. So no,
it was a great reveal.
I feel like the effort was there more so for the reveal and like the thoughtfulness of that. Outside of, you know, yeah, he's just in a bunker ranting, but then all of the effort and thought went into the reveal and the situation around him in the bunker.
Yeah.
So, number two. My number two is Dope Kicks.
Okay.
Which surprised me because it's usually one that I was putting down there of Ruby Gates. Mm-hmm. But in watching it today, it connected to the hood to me because he's like an inner city thief.
Yeah, his whole mentality is hood.
And he's getting his karma by being cursed to live whatever outcome he has bestowed upon his latest victim is the outcome that is now locked in for him. And unknowingly to him, his most recent victim, he thought he was just kind of, you know, knocking him out to steal his shoes and rob him. Didn't realize that when he knocked him out, he didn't get up. Mm-hmm. And so now the latest victim is dead. And he's got to live the death of his latest victim because of the curse that was set on him because of the victim before that who like went on the news or whatever. I don't know. I just thought it was a really interesting way to make karma horror. That was like the note I put down was just like, you know, karma is all, you know, everyone like what goes around comes around, you give what you get, what you dish out, whatever. But I just thought it was kind of a nice hood tale-ish way to represent karma, to kind of make those who are considering that lifestyle or living that lifestyle like, hey, what you are doing to your people in your community can come back and get you.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a nice, supernaturally horrific way to portray, you know, like, hey, think before you act type thing. I don't know. I also liked, you know, like the attention that they put into, like, hey, they got the steps of death right. Like, like everything that I just know about, like, a dying body. I'm like, hey, they, you know, the curse, you know, worked through him in the order of, like, what happens to an actual body when it dies. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was just a nice attention to detail there. I thought that was well done compared to some of the efforts put into the other stories.
Yeah.
You know, because that could have been something that they could have slipped up and messed up, had something happened wrong or whatever. But I just, I did like that they paid that attention to detail. I don't know. I liked the resolution, so to speak, of that story, to where he had to truthfully be repentant of what he did, beg for forgiveness, mm-hmm. if he wanted to get out of this. And getting out of this for him, man, really would have meant going to hell. But that was his better option than forever being demonized by the chaperones who were trying to take him to hell anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, the better option was for him to get it over with, let your body be at peace, so to speak, and send your spirit to hell. Or you're walking around in purgatory going through the steps of death for all eternity. Mm-hmm. And I liked that that was a part of his resolution. It's like, accept your fate. You're not getting out of this in a way that's desirable to you. Uh-huh. But there is a lesser of two evils, so to speak, if you are truly sorry for what you did. And he's trying to go fix it, but of course it's too late. And so now he's kind of just stuck. Or I don't know if he is stuck, because she was doing the autopsy or whatever, and it's like, does that kill him and send him to hell?
Yeah, it was unclear based on how it ended, because
he didn't to ask for forgiveness, but he's also being affected by the autopsy to his body. So I'm like, is that killing him? Yeah.
He looked officially? Like, at the end, it looked like he completely faded out. So I didn't know what to make of that.
Yeah, and it looked like the little demon chaperones were like pulling at his spirit while he was laying there. So that piece is not clear. So I don't know if he ended up in hell or not, but I just liked the portrayal of karma as this supernatural death through, or life through death experience. And that it felt like a tale from the hood. I appreciated, like, finally having a damn hood tale in a movie called Tales from the Hood 3.
I know.
So that's why I put it at 2.
Okay. And I completely understand your reason. My number 2 is operatic.
And I am so baffled, y'all, if you could see my face. Because I thought we were both going to have those in the bottom.
Look, man, look.
So you like Darren's movies, Darren's stories more than I do. Because you have both of his stories higher than I do.
It's not that I like the stories. I feel like I have a lot of shit to sift through. And I just got to find a place where they fit. Because this story...
Yeah, please tell me. Please.
This story is very derivative. I don't think it's very original.
Nope.
But
it's number 2, so please tell us why.
At the very least, I had something I could cling to in the story. Like, this is not a tale from the hood at all. This is not something I would want to see in this movie. But... I mean, it established a character that I could connect with, and it was the girl.
Shayla?
It's like, I could at least connect with, okay, this girl has this desire.
Okay.
I mean, it's like, I don't have any of that in any of the other stories. It was like the first story where it's like, okay, this is like, a human character who has desires, ambitions, that gives me something to ride with at the very least. And I think where it goes, isn't all that interesting. It's something that's been done before.
Right.
But it had some freaky imagery. Lynn Whitfield, I think, had this very wicked presence that just worked.
I feel like she does wicked so well. Yeah, she just has the face of like just this black witch to me.
Yeah.
And you can always cast her in some supernaturally evil role and she's going
to
nail it.
Yeah. And she doesn't have to necessarily do much to fit the part.
It's just her face.
She just kind of has these subtle faces that she makes that just adds
and her
to
delivery.
Like,
yeah.
That's evil.
Because I think of like Eve's Bayou, I think of this, think of Thin Line. It's like she just
The creepiest moment in that story is when I wish I could remember her character's name, but when she's
Miss, it's like a Frenchy sounding name,
Benoit or something like that.
Yeah,
but the girl
Shayla.
Yeah, when Shayla goes up to the mic and she's trying to sing and nothing is coming out. And they cut the Lynn Whitfield just demonic ass looking face, facial expression.
Yes.
Looking up. But yeah, I mean, honestly, it's
Miss Benoit was her name.
Benoit, okay.
Was Lynn Whitfield's name.
Okay, yeah. Miss Benoit was creepy as hell in this story. But yeah, I mean, it just had something I could like.
So shocked right now.
Yeah, and I'm not like saying it's like over the top good or anything.
Yeah,
it's
you just started out with like it's derivative.
It is
nothing
it's
special.
It's very
but it's number two.
It's very derivative, but it's like I don't know. It was like a story that attempted to have some decent character work at the very least. Not saying it executed it all that well, but it was an attempt, like, because I felt like I was just cold with everything else up until that point. I'm like, where are the characters? Like, where, yeah, I don't know. I will say at the end, like, I'm not confused or conflicted about anything, but I wasn't sure what Darren wanted me to feel about any of it. Like, because...
Well, you said you had an idea of what the message was for this. Because when I said I had it at 4, I was like, what was the social commentary or message?
Yeah.
And you said you'd get to it when it came up on your
list.
Yeah,
so, I mean... Please tell me. You see, Shayla is... She's very sociopathic. And, like... she has no... I mean, she's hesitant. Like, she's like, are you killer? Are you sure about this? Like, she's not jumping on it
but
immediately.
But once you give her, like, some reasoning on, like, how it could work,
yeah,
she's like, oh, yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Like, reassure her that it could work out.
So you sure we can do it? This is how it would go? And she, like, jumps on board. And I think, you know, that's what seals her fate is just, you know, that sociopathic nature that rests within her, and she just needed a circumstance to bring it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, did she get what she deserved in the end? Yeah, because I mean, essentially, I mean, even though she didn't know what the hell Miss Benoit was, I mean, she was under the assumption she killed this woman, which was fucked up. But I think this was the first story where everybody was kind of despicable. Like, you don't feel like anybody necessarily got what they deserved because Miss Benoit is stealing youth from everyone.
Until that body ages, too.
So it's like, it was a weird story to be included in the Tales from the Hood story because it doesn't fit the typical structure, in my opinion. Because, I think Rusty had noted that typically, in speaking strictly of the first Tales from the Hood, I mean, his goal was to, you know, present an issue and have someone afflicted, but then you have this supernatural intervention that works on behalf of the afflicted to bend the situation towards something more just. And I think in, what's the name of the story? Operatic. I mean, Miss Benoit isn't innocent. So it's like, I was kind of left feeling like morally, I guess I was confused. I was morally confused. Like, what am I supposed to make of that? And I think that's, I think that's what contributes to your sense of what the fuck am I supposed to get out of this?
Yes,
what
is it saying? Yes, yes.
Yeah, so
and
I see,
that's why I put it at 4, because I was just like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, why did we need that in Tales from the Hood?
Yeah, and what is it ultimately saying?
If, yeah.
If everything's bad. Yeah. Like, if they're all bad, like Miss Benoit and
but you have it.
Old Dude are not innocents.
You have it at 2.
And Shayla wasn't an innocent.
She wasn't either, no.
So, yeah.
This is going to probably be the shocker of the evening.
Go ahead.
My 1 is The Mouths of Babes and Demons.
Okay.
The wraparound story is my 1, and it is for one reason only.
Okay.
Because I wholeheartedly agreed with you when you said it's not a great framing device or vehicle for the rest of the tales.
It's the worst.
Because even like Tales from the Hood 1 and 2 and American Nightmares, like all of those tales and all of those stories had some sort of connection to the wraparound. They served the purpose of the wraparound. You could see why they were included as a tale in reference to with the wraparound story.
Yeah.
This Tales from the Hood 3 wraparound, other than it's a kid telling a guy scary stories, like how they were really connected to the wraparound, like there was no connected theme or purpose. Mm-hmm. So I will agree with you on that completely. Mm-hmm. The only reason it is 1 for me, it was actually the most horrific story to me in here. Mm-hmm. And it's because one of my biggest fears, biggest nightmares, like the scariest shit to me is how easily kids can be convinced to and end up taken. Mm-hmm. Like those stories scare me all the time. Like, it's always my greatest fear that just, you know, you find one convincing adult who's like, your mommy told me to pick you up because she's, you know, like, kids are innocent. Mm-hmm. And it is the most terrifying thought to me. It scares the shit out of me. So it was just the horror element of it's this guy who, I mean, of course, we know this isn't like a regular little girl. She's turns out to be the devil's helper or something. So that part makes sense, you know, like she ain't really a little kid, but like in my brain, like the whole movie, you're watching it, like this guy just went and picked up this kid from school and convinced her that she was supposed to go with him. And you find out that he's like a kid murderer. And it was just terrifying to me. Yeah. And I just think that because it's supposed to be a horror anthology, it did the best job at scaring me or unsettling me. Mm-hmm. And that's why I put it as 1. Had nothing to do with, like, it being the wraparound, how it connected to the tales. It was just the content and the topic of that wraparound was just the most unsettling. It gave me the most unsettling thoughts. So, therefore, it served its purpose as being a horror story the best to me out of all of these, and that's why I made it 1.
Okay.
It made me the most uncomfortable. Because it just it made me have thoughts that I did not enjoy having.
Yeah, well, yeah. In your case, that's a more subjective experience, and I can't really.
Yeah, like for me, it just is like, oh man, I'd be terrified. Like if my kid just got picked up by a stranger because it's so convincing, and it just made me feel all queasy inside. Like yeah, every time I watch it, that story, my brain automatically goes to like how he just went and picked that kid up from school, even though he gets his, you know, whatever at the end, she gets her payback and, you know, he's actually, you know, dying and getting, you know, all the kids' lives he's taken. But like in my mind, I'm like, how many kids did he do that? Like, terrified me. Just a terrifying thought of like, if I showed up at school and my kid wasn't there and someone like all of that just takes me down a rabbit hole every time that story starts, and then I'm just like uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so because it made me feel that way, that's why I put it at number one, because no other story had horror elements in it that really made me uncomfortable, scared me, creeped me out. There wasn't a lot of horror compared to how the wraparound story made me feel. So that's why I made it at the top.
Okay. Yeah.
Compared to you having it at the bottom. Like, yeah, I could completely see why you have it at the bottom.
Yeah,
If you take my unsettling and stuff out of it, yes, it did. It was a terrible wraparound.
It was awful.
It didn't connect to the tales at all. But as far as...
Like, considering what the wraparound is... Or... Considering what it functioned as in previous Tales from the Hood movies, it was just not a good framing device. I don't think it did its job sufficiently. Yeah. That was the criteria I judged it upon, just based on what wraparound stories had always been up to that point. So yeah, like I never said it wasn't creepy or anything.
Right.
Like it definitely has its elements of it, you know, it has elements there that are scary, but
yeah,
considering what the wraparound story typically functioned as in a Tales from the Hood movie, I felt like it just fell short.
I for me, because again, when I do my rankings, I try to establish my criteria of how I'm ranking it. So my criteria here, like one of my criteria was like the quality of the horror elements. Because it's supposed to be a horror anthology. So the scarier a tale is to me, the more points I'd give it for that specific category. Mm-hmm. And so that's what really just won it out for me on number one, because it was like the only story that scared me. The wraparound was the only one that scared me.
Yeah.
And it was only because, like you said, of me bringing in my subjective piece. I mean, it was still scary, like, on its own. Like, even if I didn't have kids or think that. Like, I mean, it's still a scary thought, a dude kidnapping kids and beheading
them. Oh, yeah, that's probably the most...
Is a very horrific storyline.
That's probably the most disturbing thing that's been in any of the movies.
Yeah,
like, the fact, even though we don't physically see him do it, the fact that it cements in the end that this dude was serially doing
and
this.
And had them buried down there.
Yeah,
that...
That's probably one of the worst things anyone's done.
Yes, and it's just it's a scary ass thought on top of he kidnaps the kids, like, as my whole personal horror element of, like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number one is Trump Shoes.
Also known as Dope Kicks.
Dope Kicks. It's number one because of a lot of the stuff that you brought up previously, honestly. Even though I guess you said the wraparound was the only one that scared you. Not that this tale scared me or anything, but I think it was, out of the main stories, it was the one that was more closely attempting to fit the mold of what they were doing from the first Tales from the Hood, I guess. I could see this kind of fitting that a little more.
Okay.
And I felt like they were starting to come back to form coming into this one.
Yeah.
And when you see him punching people out and just taking their shit, it's like, okay, I'm in a Tales from the Hood mindset looking at this tale. So, part of me did appreciate that. And then I found some of the imagery in this one was a little frightening. I think the artistic choice for the demon was an interesting one. Yeah, like that came
like
very much out of
face
that came so out of left field, but I liked it a lot.
They remind me of something else I've seen, but it's slipping my mind what the movie was. If I remember it before we're done, I'll bring it up.
Yeah, without really scaring me, I think this tale had a lot of cool imagery, and some of it even kind of brought me back to the Crazy Case story. There was one moment where I actually thought they were going to directly reference that. When they wheel him in and you see these people in like all the red coming up, I thought it was going to be, I thought they were kind of going to toy with,
like the test they did, the Crazy Case.
I thought they were going to directly reference a lot of it, but, they didn't. And I think it would have been interesting considering that this tale did include angels and demons and shit.
A sense of purgatory.
I thought it would have presented more of a linkage to that, which would have been interesting because there was so much potential to do that and they don't even touch it.
At all.
But it would have been really interesting. But I was just really into this tale visually. I felt like visually it had a lot of interesting horror compositions, and I don't know why I want to call her Voodoo Lady,
but the lady who did the curse.
The lady who did the curse, she was really good in this. Like, mm-hmm. she was a good fit for just adding to that vibe.
Right.
So it's like this story starts really silly and campy, but it starts getting really disturbing in the last half, and I felt like for that brief little bit, Tales from the Hood felt like it was kind of returning to form a little bit, and it was probably a little too late because I just felt like even with things that I liked in the previous tales leading up to that, I think on the whole, I just find a lot of them slightly lacking because either they left me apathetic or felt they would have been more fitting in something like American Nightmares.
Yeah.
And that was really, that's really what it kind of boiled down to for me. It's like, that was number one for me, honestly, because I felt like it was the only tale that merited being a tale from the hood.
That's why I had it at number two. I was just like, this is like the only tale from the hood that is also appropriate for a horror anthology.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it didn't scare me as much as the wraparound, which is why it made it to number two.
Yeah. So to the initiated, to all the viewers, listeners that have seen Tales from the Hood 3, who do you agree with more? Who do you think?
Who's ranking?
Whose reasoning made more sense? I mean, I think it's obvious.
Nope. That
my reasoning was just impeccable and hard to argue.
No.
I think Rain had a lot of holes in her logic. I think her reasoning for ranking Mouths and Babes at number one was a little too subjective, and
how are you gonna tell me I can't rank the way I rank?
I think it's only logical that you.
I'm allowed to rank.
It's only logical that you discount everything she said.
We don't share the same criteria when we rank.
I'm talking to the people.
My ranking made the most sense. I was objective.
No, but these are always going to be subjective. I mean, it's opinions. So.
And mine were better.
Okay. We'll let the people decide. All right. This has been Al Rao.
And Rain.
Holler at you later. Peace.